Hello and welcome into Airing It Out, a podcast brought to you by the Center Daily Times. I'm your host, John Sauber, and I'm joined, as always, by Josh Moyer. Josh, how's it going?
Hey, another day, more football. Can't complain.
Yeah, and the football was not great this past Saturday. It was suboptimal for probably about 2.5 quarters for both teams.
It's been suboptimal for the last 5 weeks. But good news, football fans, it's going to get good this week. Penn State, Iowa, I mean, listen, we thought early on in the season, Maryland beat Syracuse. We think, hey, you know what? That's going to be – Penn State, Maryland's going to be a great game. Not so much. We think, you know, a few weeks ago, hey, Rondale Moore from Purdue, KJ Hamler against Penn State, tremendous matchup. Doesn't happen. Rondale Moore gets injured. Not a very fun matchup. Penn State, Iowa at night at Kinnick Stadium. If you like college football, these are the type of games you look forward to, especially if you like low scoring games and defenses. Then, I mean, this is your dream game, John.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this game as a football fan. You know, it's going to be the atmosphere, like you mentioned, at Kinnick is almost unmatched in college football. James Franklin has said before, the fans are literally on top of you on the field, and it makes life difficult. You know, it's going to be a really, really interesting game, you know. But let's take a step back first.
I just want to interject one thing because, you know, I just got out of press conferences, and this was the highlight of my day, really, John. It was, you know, Kinnick Stadium has pink locker rooms for the away team, you know, to kind of get into their head. So Micah Parsons was asked, you know, hey, if you were building your own stadium, you wanted to get into your opponent's head, you know, what would you put in the locker room, you know, to get into their head? His answer, which I loved, ants. So why do I bring that up? Because I love that. There's really no rhyme or reason, John, but I couldn't go another minute without sharing that with you and our listeners. So we can move on now, but I love Micah Parsons' idea. He said he hated bugs, and that would definitely get in my head if there was a locker room.
Yeah, to be fair, I'd be totally off my game. I wouldn't be doing anything if there were a room of any kind of bug. Not even a locker room full of them. 5 or 6, I'm done. I'm cooked, I'm out, and I'm leaving the game. And we're not doing any work the rest of the night. But, you know, let's talk about something that obviously was brought up in the press conference today, you know, on, you know, a more serious note about, you know, Penn State alum who sent a letter to Jonathan Sutherland, you know.
This, and
that's the only way to call it, you know what I mean? It's an idiot, you know, talking basically smack to a kid who has long hair because he has long hair with a bunch of other issues in the letter, too. And honestly, I think James Franklin probably handled it as well as he could have given the circumstances. And given that he does want to direct attention back to Iowa, you know, had an emotional opening statement that, you know, it was he had said that he had thought of it the night before. What were your thoughts on how Franklin handled that and, you know, how this can affect the team this week?
Well, for those listeners who have been, you know, living under a rock or had their ears plugged the last couple of days, you know, maybe let's just catch him up here a little bit. But essentially, a 78-year-old man from Johnstown, Dave Peterson, who has complained to the local paper there about all sorts of things like tattoos and babies and, you know, what old people tend to complain about. And he sent a letter to redshirt junior Jonathan Sutherland, essentially just decrying his dreadlocks, saying that they're awful, they're ugly, they're unattractive. You know, you're representing Penn State out there, you know, represent Penn State the right way. And obviously a lot of teammates took offense, labeled it racist because, well, it clearly is, even if it's not overtly racist. And, you know, it's become a, you know, kind of a big thing now. I mean, Penn State condemned it. Sutherland came out and offered forgiveness, you know, to the man who doubled down on his comments this morning. So, I mean, you know, listen, racism is out there every day. We're not telling people anything, you know, they don't know. And I mean, listen, as a WASP, you know, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant here, you know, I'm not exactly the expert on race, but, you know, you gotta give props to defensive tackle Antonio Shelton, who's been outspoken from the beginning. He's the one who shined a light on this. And when you have, you know, examples of overt racism like this, you know, I think it's always good to obviously, you know, shine a light on that. And I thought James Franklin's comments today were very powerful. He got choked up near the end, essentially saying that, you know, football is something that's unifying and you know, where people of all creeds and all colors and all beliefs come together for one common purpose. And that's one of the few things in America and in the country that, you know, you can have this unifying force of, you know, love and peace. And okay, maybe that sounds a little hippy dippy, but
I mean, you know, he really did speak sincerely, and I thought, you know, said what needed to be said. So, I mean, you know, props to James Franklin too. I mean, this is, you know, this is an issue that doesn't just impact football. You know, it impacts, you know, everyone, you know, all across the country. And, you know, Penn State football doesn't have its head buried in the sand. It's been at the forefront, you know, of a lot of these issues. I mean, even going back to, you know, Wally Triplett and We Are. So I think Penn State as a whole has really kind of, you know, condemned, you know, this one, you know, singular fan and what he's had to say, you know, and has really moved forward. So, I mean, yeah, it's not something we deal with every week, but, you know, I think it was handled pretty perfectly by Penn State.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you said that pretty well. You know, I think it was important, too, to note that someone asked Franklin a follow-up, too, and usually if he addresses something in the opening statement like that, he doesn't answer after that, and you can tell he didn't want it to, but he also saw it important to mention that, you know, the team and the players and the coaches don't stick their head in the sand on what's going around the community and everything, and it's important that, you know, they recognize what's going on, they discuss it as a team. And I thought that was valuable because, like I said, he usually doesn't readdress something like this.
Yeah. Now, if only the NBA could get its head out of the sand.
Yes.
Or if I could, out of its ass. And, yes. But hey, that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah, no. I mean, we've seen this a lot in sports and literally the last week, a lot of issues with race and, you know, and social issues become even more prevalent. There are always issues like that in sports. And, you know, they've become prevalent once again, and now it's touching directly in State College, and I think the team is going to rally around Sutherland, who, clerical note, you know, he's a redshirt sophomore, not a redshirt junior.
My mistake.
But no, obviously irrelevant to the conversation, but like, he's a guy who doesn't play a ton for this team, but when he plays with a lot of aggression and you know, passion out there. And then you see him put out this statement in response. I don't know if you've seen it yet. He responded by
co-captain, special teams, backup safety, absolutely.
Yep, saying that, you know, he can't respect an opinion of a person he doesn't respect. And I think that's the proper way to handle that. And, you know, I think Penn State's going to move forward stronger as a team because of this. And, you know, it's going to unify them in some sense. And, yeah, like you said, Dave Peterson doesn't speak, I assume, for most Penn State fans, and I think the letter in itself is ridiculous. Of course, his response to double down on that letter was even more ridiculous, but at the end of the day, I don't think I'm too surprised by that response from him, and I'm sure you're not either.
I mean, listen, there are obviously racists in you know, every football fan base, and listen, you don't need to call someone the N-word to be a racist. You know, there's, you know, a lot of different ways, and you know, Dave hit on one, so...
He hit on more than one.
Well, yes, this is very true. But, you know, I think, you know, hey, you know, hopefully if he doesn't understand yet, I mean, he's not on Twitter. He's 78 years old. You know, hopefully someone sits him down, shows him the video of James Franklin talking, you know, talking emotionally, reads to him the note by Jonathan Sutherland, you know, where, you know, he talks about, you know, forgiveness and talks about, you know, what he thinks of this guy's opinion. And, you know what, maybe that doesn't change Dave Peterson's mind at all. You know, it's kind of hard to change someone who's set in their ways. But, you know, if nothing else, it brought more awareness to the issue. And, you know, I think you kind of saw Penn State's true colors when, you know, everyone kind of rallied around Jonathan Sutherland and the team. So, you know, I don't really want to give this idiot Dave Peterson any more, you know, kind of pub. But, no, I think it was an important thing for Penn State to address. And I think it's a good thing that we addressed. And, you know, if more people would. So, yeah.
Yeah, very well said. And like you said, no reason to give him more publicity for something that was just idiotic and shameful, honestly. So let's move forward by looking back a little bit. We're not going to touch too much on this Purdue game that was essentially worthless outside of a few things. As always, we're going to talk about Sean Clifford's performance here. What did you think of how he played? And I mean, especially we saw a different Sean Clifford in the first, 16 to 20 minutes of the game.
I was going to say, about the first, quarter and a half, maybe. Yeah.
And then the next, you know, quarter and a half after that was a totally different player. So what did you see from him in the game as a whole? And, you know, what changed in your opinion, for him throughout the game?
I mean, listen, on the positive end, Sean Clifford, the way he played the first three games compared to the last two, I mean, you've got to feel a lot better. I think, you know, listen, we did see him take a step. He was nearly perfect, you know, against Maryland. And he started off Purdue. You had four touchdowns on the first four drives. He completed nine passes in a row at one point. I think he's shown, you know, listen, we said before, hey, this guy has it, But, you know, when's he going to put it all together? I think he's put most of it together. I think we've seen that. It's just now it's become a consistency thing. And it wasn't just Sean Clifford. I think it was the entire Penn State offense. I mean, really until Noah Cain got the ball again, which, hey, Penn State learned from its mistakes. You know, Pitt, they put him in for one drive. He scores a touchdown, has like three quarters of the drive's yards, and we never see him again. Pitt, you know, James Franklin says afterward, hey, you know, we should probably play him more at the end of games. So what happens against Purdue? They put him in toward the end of the game, and he has like an 82-yard fourth quarter. You know, now people think he's maybe the team's best running back. You know, he's been my number one since the preseason. And, yeah, I mean, it's just wild how this – when this offense is on, few are better. But when this offense is off, few are worse. I don't think there is a team in college football that has a higher ceiling and a lower floor. And I think that's what we saw against Purdue.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, and I think a lot of that goes back to play calling. And, you know, we give Ricky Ronnie a lot of credit against Maryland because he really caught a pretty perfect game there. He caught a really good first 20 minutes of this game, and then it seemed like they went away from a lot of things that worked for them. They weren't trying to get the ball in the hands of their playmakers. Clifford looked a little bit rattled, and then, of course, they get into the fourth quarter, and they looked fine again, you know, especially with Kanan on that drive. And I think part of what's going to help Clifford a lot this year is that consistency in the run game. The best way to get the consistency is to play your best backs. And I think for me,
that is a novel idea, yeah, John.
Crazy, I know.
Playing your best players. I mean, you know.
You'd be surprised. Apparently, it's more difficult.
Maybe you should write a letter to Ricky Ronnie about.
But at this point, I still think Devin Ford is the best back on the team, the most talented, and will be by the end of the year. You know, the guy who gets the most touches. But it seems clear to me that him and Kane are really separating themselves as the two best backs on this team, because Journey Brown wasn't great. Journey Brown was good. I'll give him that. But he, like you mentioned last week, too often it's 1 to 2 yards. It's not 3 to 4 yards, or he's losing 2 to 3 yards. You know, but he's a quality home run threat out of the backfield. And I think he should be used.
You can't say anything. I mean, listen, I think everyone is in agreement, from the staff to the fans to teammates. Top three backs, you know, have to be those three guys. And number four is Ricky Slade. I mean, you hate to say that, but, I mean, listen, you know, it maybe a guy hasn't separated himself at the top, but right now Ricky Slade has separated himself, you know, from the bottom.
Yeah,
he just has.
And it's not always his fault, as you made note a couple of times while we were watching the game Saturday.
Yeah.
It seems like the run blocking is markedly worse when he's in there. I don't get it. But, I mean, it's not all his fault.
Absolutely not. It is.
He does need to be better, though, to continue to work his way, you know, as part of this rotation. But like you said, I think right now there's a clear top three. I think we're going to see this move towards a clear top two with Brown used in the role I think Penn State wanted to use him as a return man, you know, as a guy you go for a home run threat. You know, he's a nice receiver out of the backfield. If you can get him the ball behind the line of scrimmage, on wheel routes, various types of things where he can use his speed in the open field. And, you know, that's probably going to be the best version of this Penn State offense, is one that's relying on Kane and Ford out of the backfield as the two primary weapons. Now, we'll see how quickly they're willing to move to that, because I know it's tough to finally commit to that, because, you know, Journey Brown has done a lot for the program. He has helped a lot, you know, play special teams. He said before time and time again, he'll do anything he's asked, and he's proven that on the field over and over again. I think you're right. I think Slade is, you know, working himself out of this rotation, and we'll see, you know, what his touches are like in a game this week that is going to be, you know, the biggest game for Penn State probably until Ohio State. You know, I'd say this is bigger than the whiteout, just because I think they've got a chance to win the whiteout game convincingly. I don't know that they win this game at all. And I think because of that, this is a more important game for Penn State. Like I said, I don't believe in Michigan. I haven't all year. They're a bad team who.
Well, you did pick Iowa to beat Michigan. So, I mean, you have been wrong about, you know, Michigan before.
In my defense, they just out-batted each other's offense. Like, those were two of the worst offenses in the country, it seemed like, on Saturday watching the game. Both teams couldn't get anything going. So
can't give Michigan any credit, can you?
Absolutely not. I won't. And as long as they're bad, I won't either. Not bad, to be clear. They're 8-14.
I mean, listen, I won't say that this game is bigger than the whiteout. I mean, I understand why you would say that. And I mean, it obviously is a big game. It's Penn State's biggest game to this point. It's the only ranked team they faced to this point. It's on the road. It's actually, you know, a difficult atmosphere to play in. I mean, Maryland, I mean, God, that felt like a freaking home game for Penn State in the second half.
Oh, it was a home game.
Even in the first half, I mean, you know, I mean, geez, if Penn State fans didn't, you know, didn't make up 40% of that stadium, I would have been surprised. But, you know, so you know, this is kind of their first real test. And, I mean, you know, the Penn State-Michigan game doesn't mean nearly as much if Penn State is going into it with one loss. So yeah, I can see, you know, why you would say that. But I just think, you know, Penn State wideout, 7:30 p.m., I mean, you want to keep up the momentum, you know, keep your fan base excited. You know, you can lose to Iowa if you beat Michigan. I mean, and again, because it comes down to Penn State can lose one of these games. It isn't the end of the world if they lose to Iowa. You know, if they beat Ohio State then, you know, come November, they're still at the top of the standings because they hold the tiebreaker then over Ohio State. That's really what matters. So yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to call fake news on that, you know, John Sauber.
I stand by that statement. I still think this game is, like I said, it's a matter of this game is not nearly as winnable as Michigan is. I think they're both winnable. I honestly, like I said, think Penn State could blow out Michigan like they did 2 years ago in the whiteout. I wouldn't be surprised to see that outcome. I fully expect this to be a one possession game at Kinnick at night on Saturday night, and it might come down to who has the ball last. And I, you know, like you said, they can't afford to lose one of these three games, but I still think you want to win all three. And if they win this game Saturday, I think they win all three. You know, I've been
swayed. Whoa. You're talking, we're not talking Michigan,
Michigan State.
Iowa and – oh, okay. I thought you were referring to Ohio State. No, I wanted to make sure. I'm like, are we talking about Michigan State or Ohio State?
Still too far down the road on that Ohio State game. Okay. Ohio State's still probably beating this team if they play today.
Well, rank those three teams for me, though. Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State, best to worst.
You know how this is going. Iowa, Michigan State, Michigan, in that order.
Okay.
And I don't think the bottom two are nearly as good as the top one.
See, I mean,
and I understand
well,
that
weird. So Iowa you put literally Iowa, just beat
– yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I fully understand
your
that.
Big Ten power rankings would be all out of whack this week. People would be writing you letters left and right.
My biggest issue is that Nate Stanley isn't as bad as he played this past Saturday. I mean, I'm going to say he's not an elite quarterback by any means. He has struggled against Penn State in the past. But I think he's just a slightly above average quarterback. And, you know, the Michigan defense finally, you know, showed up this past weekend, and the offense at Michigan did what it usually does. I think if that game's played at Kinnick, Iowa wins that game. And I think home field is the determining factor there. But yeah, Iowa to me is the better team. They're the more consistent team offensively. They just didn't show up this past Saturday, and that happens in college football. We see it all the time. But yeah, the Michigan offense is just bad at this point. You know, there's no real way around it.
I think it's funny when we talk about these different teams, and you know, with Iowa, it's you know, can Nate Stanley find his groove this game? You know, oh, is Brian Lewerke, is he really a good quarterback for Michigan State? Oh, is Shea Patterson, is he the answer at Michigan?
No.
And then we get to Penn State, and we're not talking about Sean Clifford as much. It's, is Ricky Ronnie going to call a good game this, you know,
well,
this
I think week? The same,
is he going to have a good plan?
I think Michigan is the same issue.
Well, that's true. With and Josh it's funny Gattis. With the James yeah. Franklin coaching tree.
Of, yeah. Well, no, and I mean, people ridiculed Franklin for choosing Ronnie over Gattis. He might have made the right choice.
I think now we know at Alabama who was calling the plays.
Yeah.
Mike Locksley.
Yeah. And that, like I said, that Michigan offense has just been so brutal. It's funny you mentioned that, though. You know, there are concerns at quarterback for these other three teams. I don't think Penn State has as many of those concerns with Clifford because he's shown what he can do.
Yeah.
Shea Patterson has shown how bad he can be. Nate Stanley showed how bad he can be. Lewerke's probably the best of the three, but has still had some pretty terrible games in his own right.
I mean, Stanley is close there too for me. See, like, you know, maybe it's just, you know, bias on my end, you know, confirmation bias. But when I see Nate Stanley, I almost see, you know, Anthony Morelli for Penn State. And by that, I mean, you know, you look back at the final stats to his career, and it's funny. If you talk to a current college student, you know, they think Anthony Morelli was wonderful. If you talk to someone who went to school during that time, they think Anthony Morelli was the worst quarterback ever because he always seemed to dominate the bad teams, put up a lot of stats. But when he played the top defenses, you know, ranked teams, he always seemed to fall apart. He never did as well. And I can't help but see Nate Stanley. And maybe it's not as extreme as it was for Penn State's Morelli. But, I mean, you know, last year he played a good defense in Penn State. And, you know, he just did terribly. When he plays an elite defense in Michigan, he throws three interceptions. You know, can't even score a touchdown. It's Iowa's lowest offensive output in 8 freaking years. I mean, you know, elite quarterbacks, great quarterbacks, hell, good quarterbacks, don't do that, you know. So So I don't know. I mean, I think it is pretty close, you know, between those guys. But honestly, right now, I was thinking this on the car ride over, who's the second best quarterback in the Big Ten? I mean, I would say Justin Fields right now is number one. Is Clifford number two already?
It might be Clifford. I mean, you can make an argument for Jack Cohn, but he doesn't have to do much at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, it might be Clifford. I mean, but I think
the main point is Clifford before I would take Cohn.
I think I would too, but I think the main point is it's Fields and everybody else at this point.
I mean, that's also
true. And it's not.
But if I'm doing like a, you know, first four or five games, all Big Ten team, you know, I guess I put Sean Clifford on my second team right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to imagine you would do so. Adrian Martinez hasn't lived up to the billing this year in Nebraska. Well,
Nebraska hasn't lived up to the billing this year. Goodness gracious. They barely got past Northwestern.
Yeah, no, they've been pretty brutal this year, as has most of the Big Ten, though.
Also true.
And Tanner Morgan has been, you know, relatively good at Minnesota. Couldn't remember his name, as you can see, that I had to Google it, which is fantastic. But he was very good against Purdue. I believe he had four touchdown passes.
Everyone's 31. Good against Purdue.
Fair. But, you know, there are guys in that mix, but you're right. Among these top teams, especially, Clifford is probably the second best quarterback in the group. And, you know, that's a good sign for Penn State, at least.
Yeah.
If they've got the best quarterback among those, you know, the four themselves and the next three teams are going to play, and they might have the best defense among that group too, then they've got a real shot to go 3-0, like I said, in those games. And, you know,
they might be favorite. I mean, Penn State is – they're a four-point favorite against Iowa. You've got to think that they're going to be favorite against Michigan at home. And then Michigan State – yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not sold on you know, Sparty yet either. You know, I mean, they almost seem like a clone of Iowa. I mean, look at what they did against Arizona State. I mean, what was that final score, 10-7?
It was brutal is what it was. I don't think anybody enjoyed watching that game. But, yeah, you know, this is a Penn State team that is probably going to be favored in its next three games. And I actually think there's a line out already on Michigan that they're already favored. You know, so it points
to – do you know what the spread to that is?
It is – they are a three-point favorite against Michigan as of now, according to the Valley Forge Casino and FanDuel. But, you know, there's only one game where Penn State is probably going to be an underdog the rest of this year, and that is against Ohio State. They're favored against Michigan State. They're favored against Minnesota. They're obviously favored against Rutgers and Indiana. Don't mean to put Indiana in the Rutgers bucket. But Rutgers is its own bucket.
Rutgers, yeah. Will Rutgers be favored at all, you know, the rest of the season? I mean,
can they scrimmage themselves?
They would still find a way to lose. You know, like, listen, I'll get on this topic every week because it's one of my pet peeves. Rutgers' continued existence.
They're just so brutal. Oh, God. It continues to get worse somehow. I don't get it.
So their best player now, Raheem Blackshear, you know, said that he's redshirting this year. He's their best player. And it looks like then he's going to transfer after the season. And their quarterback, Sikowski, you know, appears to be contemplating the same. So, I mean, it's just when you think the dumpster fire can't get any brighter, you know, like, I don't know. Then it's just like the dumpster itself just manages to catch fire again. It's absolutely incredible. It's good kind of comedic relief, but – I mean, just, you know, get a
good game
out
to close the year with.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Rutgers, I mean, you know, I joked that, you know, they're as bad as an FCS team. They're not, but they're like a really bad MAC team. Like, get them out of here, you know. I mean, if you need the New York market, like, you know, pull in Syracuse or, you know, something. I mean, Rutgers, ugh, what an embarrassment.
Yeah, just a brutal program that has no real direction. Fires another head coach with Chris Ash, you know, after knowing they were going to fire him for 2 weeks. But that's another diatribe for another day for both of us that I'm sure we'll go on not long after this podcast ends.
Stay tuned for the Rutgers podcast in a few weeks. That'll be entertaining.
Yeah, that's going to be about 45 minutes of jokes hurled Rutgers' way, so that should be fun for all Penn State fans.
I'm looking forward to that.
So am I. But, yeah, you know, this is – but back on the
train. Okay, yeah, let's get back on. You know, I tend to – hey, you mentioned Rutgers. This is your fault.
Sorry. I'll take the blame on that.
Let's get back on track with Iowa.
But, yeah, no, Iowa presents a really interesting matchup for Penn State because it's almost the exact same matchup that Michigan's going to present. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a power run offense. Michigan tends to run out of the spread more, whereas Iowa runs out of single back. They'll go I form and, you know, more traditional under center looks. And you have a run game that can dominate you with offensive line talent. Tristan Wirfs, one of their offensive tackles, an athletic freak. I believe he was number one on Bruce Feldman's freak lists this past year. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. Incredible athlete.
you know, he's going to probably see a lot of Vitor Gross-Matos, I would imagine. That should be a really, really fun matchup. And then, of course, Iowa has their own, you know, version of Gross-Matos and A.J. Epineza, who is one of the best defensive ends in the country. And, you know, he's going to present a very difficult matchup for, you know, Rasheed Walker and Will Fries. So it'll be really interesting to see what those two defensive ends are able to do in this game. And I get the feeling that one of them is going to be a game wrecker, and whoever does it is going to be the one that wins the game for his team.
You know, you look at the both defenses to this to these teams, and there might be six plus, you know, future day one or day two draft picks. I mean, you know, there's a lot of defensive playmakers, a lot of defensive highlights, you know, just waiting to happen in this game, which, I mean, could be why, you know, we see another 6-4 game on Saturday night. But, I mean, yeah, if you like defense, what, I think Penn State is second in the nation in scoring defense. Iowa is second or third in the nation in scoring defense. And I want to say the Las Vegas over-under for this game is about, you know, maybe 42.5, which, again, is funny because I think Penn State is averaging close to that, you know, on its own. But, I mean, both of these defenses have a lot going for it. You know, Penn State right now leads the nation in sacks per game with 5. I mean, you really can't say enough about it. So, yeah, I think this will – listen, if Penn State somehow goes off this game, scores 30-plus points, I mean, you know, goodness gracious. I mean, we should start talking about the college football playoff later that night. But, you know, I think we're all kind of expecting a low-scoring game because of that firepower. Whereas Iowa, the big difference to me is, you know, Iowa has these great offensive tackles. They have a reputation for being a good offensive line. Penn State doesn't. Penn State does not have great offensive tackles. And Iowa has a very
Rasheed
good
Walker has been
line.
Admittedly pretty great this year. I'll give him credit.
Who's that?
Rasheed Walker for Penn State has been pretty great this year. But yeah, no, I think you're generally right.
He's good, but I would still take Werfs over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to question that, but it is, you know, and you're right. It's that strength on strength matchup. I think it's interesting the comparison here of Penn State's playmakers compared to Iowa's playmakers,
yeah.
Because if they can get their playmakers the ball and get them in space, there is a scenario where they get to 28, 31 points. You know, I don't think it's likely, but because they have the big playability, they can. Whereas Iowa, for them to win this game, is going to be 13, 17, you know, somewhere in that range. You're not going to score too much. You're going to beat them down.
I mean,
they're bludgeon
true.
Them. And Amir Smith-Marset, their best wide receiver, is going to have to, you know, put on a show this weekend. That'll be another interesting matchup with three Castro Fields. Really just fantastic matchups across the board in this game. You know, and what is your matchup that you're sort of looking forward to seeing this weekend?
You know, for me, I guess it's just in the trenches. I mean, I need to, you know, sit down and take a closer look at it. But, I mean, I think that's where this game is obviously going to be won or lost. You know, Penn State's strength is its defensive line and its front seven. You know, for Iowa, I mean, it's its defensive line as well. I guess to me, I think the key to this game, if I had to pick, would be Iowa's defensive line versus Penn State's offensive line. I'm going to be looking at that, especially more than anything. I think if Penn State wins that battle, it wins the game.
Yeah, I think it could win the game handily if it wins that battle.
I mean, you have when Penn State can run the ball and Sean Clifford doesn't have to carry the entire load, you know, good things happen. When Penn State can get its players in space because Clifford is being given enough time, you know, good things can happen. But, you know, if Clifford is being, you know, flushed out of the pocket, if he's running an RPO and he's keeping the ball most of the time, I mean, you know, we saw him struggle with that before, you know, not hitting the holes quite as well. You know, if it's a little bit jumbled, you know, the vision isn't quite there. And, you know, that's why I think, you know, Jaywon Sider, when he talked to us 2 weeks ago, one thing he said is that, you know, different running backs, you know, might see more time based on the opponent. And I think for a team like this with a strong defensive line that there's probably not going to be a whole lot of running room, I think someone like, again, I think Noah Cain fits in really well with that because as James Franklin said, as everyone knows, you know, this is a guy who's going to pick up 3, 4, 5 yards every carry. He's not going to go backwards. He's not just going to get you 1 yard or fall down at the line of scrimmage. And I think that's exactly what Penn State needs to move the ball in this game. I think he should be the bell cow in this game. This should be where we really see, you know, the Noah Cain show that even if he doesn't start, he damn well better be in the second series or third series that Penn State comes out on.
Yeah, I think you make a great point about Noah Kane being the guy that's going to run between the tackles. But I think the best way to attack this Iowa defense might be on the edges and not even trying to mess with that interior of the defensive line. And I do think if they're going between the tackles, Kane has to be that guy. You're absolutely correct. The other three guys, maybe Devin Ford could hold up a little bit, but Slade and Brown probably are not going to hold up in those situations. And you know, I think your best chance, though, is to get Ford, to get Kane, to get Slade, to get Brown the ball in space, to get them the ball on the edges, run more sweeps rather, you know, run more off tackle than inside zone. You know, get your guys out on the edge, give them space to work, run screens. I know they don't seem to do it much at Penn State, but they really, like, if you can get that Iowa defensive line upfield in Sean Clifford's face and let him get the ball out on a screen pass, you're going to have a lot of room to work with because you're going to have a front four that's not there because they're going to be, you know, already 7 yards up the field trying to get a sack.
I guess I will say this, though. I mean, you know, because that's with Ricky Slade, with Devin Ford, with Journey Brown, I mean, you're right. That's where they make their living. You know, it's the outside, it's the big play. But if you take away every running back's longest run this season, you take away every running back's longest run, you know, who leads the team in rushing average? It's Noah Kane by more than a half yard. You know, I mean, if you look at Journey Brown or you look at Devin Ford's, you know, yards per carry this season, it's tremendous. But that's because they've all carried the ball, what, like 30?
Let's not discount Nick Urie in this conversation.
Okay. Well, I'm going to. But, you know, they all have between, you know, about 30, 40 carries, and they all have that one long run that's kind of, you know, inflating their yards per carry average, you know, by about 2 yards or so. So, I mean, you take that away, you know, the bell curve is a whole lot different. For Noah Kane, he has a lot more runs that go for 3, 4, 5 yards, whereas, you know, Brown, Slade, and Ford have a lot more that go for, you know, 0, 1, 2. So, I mean, yeah, okay, fine. Don't run Noah Kane, you know, between the tackles 40 times. You can take some chances on the outside with these guys. But, I mean, that's the thing. Ricky Ronnie's got a lot of different weapons. He's got a lot of different playmakers. There's a lot of different things he should be able to do. No defense should be able to key in on a certain thing here without him going to something else. And that's why I just feel like the creativity of this offense is so lacking. If you had an elite offensive coordinator on this team, this would be an elite program right now. You know, like, for instance, I would love to see more two running back sets. You know, I think Jaywan Sider would love to see, you know, more two running back sets. You know, and that's something that Penn State has, you know, started to implement, you know, obviously a little bit more as the season's gone on. Maybe we'll see that more against Iowa, but, you know, hey, play up to your strengths, especially when someone like Justin Shorter is injured.
Yeah, and I would like to see someone like KJ Hamler a little bit more in the backfield, you know, even out of some pistol and let him, you know, behind Clifford, let him run a little swing to get him in space.
I mean, that's how Purdue gets the ball to, you know, got the ball to Rondale Moore. They put him in the backfield. They move him all around. And yeah, I feel like we really don't see KJ Hamler there, you know, very often.
And it doesn't even have to just be Handler. Jahan Dotson's proven he can do it too. I mean, we all saw the, you know, his running in space this weekend on that in route that he took it to the house.
That surprised me. I did not think he was that fast. I mean, I knew he was fast, but I didn't think he was outrun the entire defense fast.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a slim guy. You know, there's not a lot to him, and when he gets moving, he can get going. You know, he's got the great acceleration too that obviously helps him in that regard. But, you know, we'll see what, you know, he's able to do this weekend. Obviously, him and KJ Hamler both are going to have to find some space to operate against Iowa in space. You know, and I'm going to be interested to see how they handle that. You know, are they trying to go over the top again like they tried the first few weeks? Are they willing to go underneath like they did against Maryland, like they did in the first quarter and, you know, 5 or so minutes against Purdue, where they tried to get Dotson and Hamler the ball 5 to 10 yards down the field and just let them make something happen? And I think that's the best way to beat this Iowa team too, because they're not the fastest team on the planet. You know, you can beat them downfield, but the best way to beat them if they're going to drop their safeties deep is to hit guys in the middle of the field and let them make guys miss. You know, we'll see if Ricky Ronnie implements that this week. I think Penn State fans should hope that he does. It should be a major part of the game plan. I don't know that it will be just because we've seen it so inconsistently in the past, but I think getting those playmakers the ball in space, as always, going to be vital to Penn State getting a win.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's vital every week. I mean, we saw, you know, them talk about, you know, KJ the week leading up to Maryland, and then they finally got him his touches and he just went off. And I think you could kind of see the frustration in KJ, you know, this past Saturday, you know, when he kept, you know, he wasn't getting the ball on offense too much. I think he finished with 3 catches. but you could kind of see, you know, KJ start to press. And by that, I mean, you know, look at the punt returns. He had punt returns, three went backwards because he's trying to find daylight. He's trying to make a play. He's trying to force something that isn't there. And, I mean, it's just not going anywhere. I mean, you know, Penn State needs to make sure, you know, KJ, this offense has a lot of different weapons. There's a lot of speed on this entire team, offense and defense. James Franklin has said this might be the fastest team he's ever had. And on the fastest team he's ever had, the fastest player is KJ Hamler. He is their big playmaker. And if he does not touch the ball at least, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a game, you are doing a great disservice to KJ, the offense, fan. You're doing a disservice to everyone. I mean, he needs to touch the ball. Good things happen when KJ Hamler touches the ball. Penn State would not be in the position it's at now without KJ Hamler. You look back at the Appalachian State game last year, KJ Hamler, if it wasn't for him, Penn State probably loses that game.
Yep.
You know, KJ Hamler helped save that season, and he could save this season. He could beat Iowa. I mean, hell, if you give him the ball every single play, I think he could beat them single-handedly. He is a talented player. That might be a bit of hyperbole, but get him the ball.
Yeah, it's not too difficult. You know, he had 5 touches against Purdue total, 3 catches, 2 rushes. The rushes went for 0 and negative 9 yards respectively, so not the best places to get him the ball there. They tried to get it to him in space, but, you know, Purdue did a good job of setting the edge, and Hamler had nowhere to go. So that's why you have to get him the ball outside of those defensive ends. You know, don't get it to him before he gets outside of them. Let him make something happen once he gets outside there. Get him outside the numbers. Give him space to work. You know, we'll see if they do it. I'm not even going to try and predict if they're going to get him the ball enough this weekend, because it's been, like I said, it's just so ridiculously inconsistent. We saw it with Maryland when they emphasized it so much, 6 for 108 and a touchdown. And then against Purdue, he has 3 receptions. So, I mean, I don't know, you know, they were successful in the first half. Sure. So maybe they went away from him a little bit because they didn't have to go to him. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to
defense, you know, when your offense is lagging, like what I think Penn State had less than 45 yards of total offense in the third quarter, you know, maybe then it seems like a good time. You need a big play to go to your biggest big play guy. You know, so it's just, I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's just curious. I mean, you know, what I'm saying, you know, for the most part, you know, you don't need a doctorate in football to understand it. And I get that. Listen, that Penn State is, you know, they always say they give what the defense takes. But, I mean, hell, that's every single college football team. You know, you need to be, you know, smart enough to know, you know, where to put him in the plan, to how to draw up the play, to how to get, you know, Hamler involved. I mean, if you don't know how to get your best offensive player involved in the offense, yeah, I think that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a pretty major problem. And you know, there are pretty easy ways to design getting him the ball when Iowa doesn't really have a say in it. And if they do, you have backdoor options to, you know, get a big play with someone else. You know, the screen plays I mentioned, like, they don't run enough screens to him. He's got to get the ball on bubbles, tunnels, whatever you want to get him the ball on outside behind the line of scrimmage. He has to get the ball in those situations, and they're just not right now. And, you know, it's an Iowa team that is going to try and beat them up the middle, and they're not going to have all of that access up there. So we'll see if, you know, they try and work outside with him a little bit more. Maybe, you know, this is the first game that they've been in, you know, that they've thought they've had a real chance of losing, I guess, because, you know, they could have lost Pitt pretty easily, but Pat Narduzzi saved the day for them again.
Boy.
We won't go on that rant on this episode, but I would like to sometime again soon, just because it's fun. But, you know, this is a game where it's going to be a real test for them. You know, where
just real quick, 4th and 1, he goes for a field goal. Dumbest play call I've ever seen in my 34 years of living on this earth.
It was still incredible, and I still love it so much because of the level of idiocy it takes to make that call. But anyways, this is the first game that Penn State can look at and be like, okay, like, we don't know if we're going to come out with a win in this one. They are favored, like you said. We'll see if that matters at the end of the day, and we'll see if they're willing to pull out all the stops to try and get the win against Iowa, because I think if you're a Penn State fan, you're sort of hoping that the offense has been, you know, pulling back a little bit, especially against Purdue. Once you go up 28-0, you don't have to do much that defense.
Is Penn State Iowa, is this like essentially a race to 20? The first one to score 20 points wins this game.
It might be a race to 10. Like, it might be a race to 6. I think that's everybody's dream scenario. Oh, another 6-4 where everybody loses in the end. But yeah, no,
I think that was the first Penn State game I ever covered. 6-4. That was, well, I mean, it was one hell of a first Penn State game to cover, but my goodness gracious.
Yeah, the we're not, hopefully we're not looking, hopefully for everybody's sake, we're not looking at another 6-4 this weekend. But you know, there's a chance that this game doesn't get to double digits for both teams. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if 7-6, 9-7 is the outcome here. I'm not expecting it, but like, that's a real scenario that could play out this
weekend. I mean, it's just so weird to me that we're even talking about that. Like, how many offensive teams, like, where is Penn State in scoring offense right now? Can we look that up? You know, I just ask that because I wonder how many other teams that are ranked as high as Penn State have this conversation where they're like, man, well, you know, will they score 10 or 20 points this game? I mean, don't get me wrong, Iowa's a very good defense, but, you know, I just feel like, you know, if you know, Iowa's playing Alabama, no one's saying, hey, is, you know, Alabama getting to 20 points? And listen, I know Penn State isn't Alabama, but I'm just saying, you know, usually the, you know, expectations are a little bit higher for offenses. So what? Penn State is fifth in scoring offense. And what do they average a game?
Tied for fifth with Appalachian State at 47 points per game.
And we're like, you know, 10 points might be pushing it. I mean, that, seriously, I mean, so the teams ranked above Penn State right now. Let's see here. Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, you know, LSU.
All average at least 49 points per game. Whew. Yeah, this Iowa defense, it's something – I'm telling you, it's something about Kinnick too, though. Something about Iowa that really gets teams out of sorts. That's why I do think there's a chance that Penn State wins this game. You know, 31-13 is a – you know, it's in the 25-75% probability of this game, you know, the middle 50% here of what could happen. I don't think it's that crazy for Penn State to win the game by three scores if the offense gets going. I also don't think it's crazy for them to lose 13-0 if the offense is bad. It's just one of those games where there's a ton of outcomes possible because of the atmosphere of the game, because of the two teams playing, and because we've seen an offense that can be really up and down at times.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Purdue game was, you know, pretty much could end up being the epitome of the season. You know, you have Penn State hot start. You see what they're capable of. You know, you see all the talent they have, and then kind of inexplicably after they show all that, they just kind of go in hibernation mode. I mean, it's just, I don't think there's a really good reason for that. I mean, you know, James Franklin kind of struggled to put it into words after the game. It was just, you know, maybe we just took a breath and we just exhaled and we got to know we can't do that. But I mean, for about the first 20 minutes to that game was unbelievable. Penn State was unstoppable. The middle 20 minutes, you could say Purdue outplayed Penn State even. You know, it was like they were playing. It was like Penn State was a different team playing a different team. I mean, it was amazing, you know, how quickly that turned. And you wonder if that middle 20 minutes could be a full 60 minutes against a good defense like Iowa. I think that's a fair question to ask. And it's weird, you know, Penn State is undefeated, but you still have these, and they're averaging more than 40 points a game, and they're the fifth highest scoring offense. And that's still what we're devoting, you know, most of our talk to, because we just don't know it really if those numbers are for real. If Penn State's offense and Ricky Ronnie can keep that on track, because we've seen what happens when they get off track. Again, I said it earlier in this podcast, I'll say it again. I don't think there is another offense in this country that has a higher ceiling at Penn State while having a lower floor.
Yeah, and that's why I said, you know, I don't think 31 is too crazy. With, like you said, the ceiling is ridiculously high, as we saw against Maryland, and it's ridiculously low, as we saw for about 20 minutes against Purdue and against Pitt. But, you know, I think
– really, more than 20 minutes against Purdue. I mean, you know, after the first four drives, the last – what was it, 12 drives, 14 drives, they had one touchdown.
Yeah, it was just such a weird – and I think, you know – Franklin might be onto something with the, you know, they just sort of took a breath, because it did seem like it was like, oh, this game's, you know, good and over, nobody has to worry about it, and they sort of took their foot off the gas completely. And then, you know, it didn't feel like the offense was doing horribly. It just sort of felt like they were going out and there wasn't a lot of,
I don't know, I mean, Blake Gillikin did punt on like five straight possessions.
That's true. But yeah, no, I mean, but it seemed like the offense, you know, guys were going through the motions. It didn't seem like there was the same intensity that they came out with to start the game. But I think this game this weekend is going to be a good litmus test for this offense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if they put up 30 or more, this is an elite offense. Like, I don't think anyone's going to argue that after what we've seen from the Iowa defense. You know, if they win this weekend, you know, by multiple scores, I think then that Ohio State game isn't such a foregone conclusion like I think it is right now. There's no doubt about it. This game is – is massive, not necessarily for the win-loss totals. Like you said, they could lose this game and be fine. But if they come out and they show, you know, if they hit that ceiling this weekend, then there's a chance that this is indicative of the rest of the year and how it's going to go. And maybe, you know, maybe 10-0 into that Ohio State game isn't that far off base.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, even, you know, 3 weeks ago, we kind of looked at our, you know, preseason, you know, predictions and wondered, you know, if we, you know, we picked too many wins or too many losses. And we were both kind of the same opinion, like, ah, you know, Penn State's playing worse than we thought they would, you know, but they're in better shape than we thought they would be, because the rest of the Big Ten seemed like it was down so much. And, I mean, you look at it now and it's, you know, okay, actually this team could be a lot better than, you know, we gave the credit for. I mean, everyone kind of assumed Penn State's defense would be on that elite level. The question was always, can the offense follow? Can the offensive line, you know, be not terrible this year? Even if they're just average, you know, or slightly better than last year, that would be a plus. But, you know, with you know, a young quarterback who, you know, definitely would, you know, should be a step down from Trace McSorley, you know, different running backs, you know, a young group of receivers who struggled with drops last year, there were just a lot of question marks. But, you know, I think we've kind of seen that potential early on that, yeah, at this point, I think it's still a mixed bag. I mean, we're still trying to figure out, you know, whether or not or what this offense is capable of. And yeah, I mean, I think you said it perfectly. This is a litmus test. You know, where does Penn State belong? If Penn State wins this game convincingly, I mean,
sky's the limit.
I'm curious, you know, how far up they'll slide in the Associated Press rankings. Even if no one loses again, I mean, you know, Penn State will still be undefeated. And, you know, to have a win like that on your resume all of a sudden, I mean, Penn State, you know, would have not just beaten nobodies, but to, you know, beat Iowa by double digits. I mean, I think Penn State will have needed to prove everything they needed to prove in the first half of the season already.
Yeah, and, you know, to throw another metric into play here, Bill Connelly at ESPN, now with ESPN does SP Plus, which is a tempo and
opponent doesn't take adjusted into account the opponents you play.
It does. It's a tempo and opponent adjusted measure of college football efficiency. Has Penn State as the number 10 offense in the country right now. And, you know, while, you know, you may disagree about the him not weighing opponent enough, I think that
they were ranked number 127 in third downs prior to Maryland.
Yeah, well, but I think this is indicative of something for the future. You know what I mean? It's another metric to add to the pile to figure out what this Penn State team is. But I think that's promising, you know, for team that they are a top 10 team in the country in offense, even though they've played poorly at for long stretches so far this season. So, you know, we'll see what team comes out against Iowa, whether it's, you know, the Penn State offense that thrashed Maryland and, you know, maybe goes in and puts up 35 in Kinnick and, you know, quiets the crowd quickly, or if it's the one that played those extended stretches against Purdue and Pitt that doesn't show up. And all of a sudden, you know, it's 7-3 Iowa near the end of the game and the offense isn't in a good position to do anything about it. But, you know, time for predictions as always this week. So I'm going to toss it to you first on this one. Who wins this game and why?
You know what? I'm going to go with Penn State right now. I'm going to say 20-13. So I think Penn State covers the spread and they hit the under for you bettors. Don't bet. but yeah, I just, again, I mean, I think Penn State has the higher ceiling than Iowa. I think Penn State's the better team. It really comes down to, can they execute against the Hawkeyes? And I think they're good for, you know, at least, you know, one or two or three, you know, big plays this game that can lead to a touchdown. And I think that's what's going to be the difference. I mean, I look for, you know, KJ Hamler to get involved. I could see, you know, Noah Kane, you know, getting the ball a little bit more. And we've seen how dominant he can be on certain drives. I mean, you look against Purdue. I mean, again, he had almost all the yards on that, you know, touchdown drive. You look at, you know, Pitt. He had, you know, 50 plus yards out of the 80 plus yards on that drive. So, you know, I think those guys can be the difference makers in this game. And I think, you know, for the most part, you know, Iowa dominates on non-defense, but I think there are going to be those few drives combined with Penn State's elite defense that, you know, makes that game and that score 20-13.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 27-17 here. And, you know, again, as you mentioned, that's the over and Penn State still covers. You know, I just think this team's going to hit enough big plays, like you said, to make things happen. And all it takes is three to get to 21. Then you've got two field goals to add there. You know, I think the Penn State offense comes out and shows what they can do. And there's a chance that they hop on Iowa like they did Purdue early. But I think Iowa will respond better than Purdue and, you know, make this closer. than the Boilermakers did. But at the end of the day, I think the Penn State offense is too much for Iowa to handle, you know, and I don't think there's, you know, much they can do to stop them at this point other than hope Epineza just gets pressure on every single play, which could happen because I don't think either of us would be surprised by that because he's that good. But yeah, you know, those you can find those predictions, of course, and the rest of our predictions later this week in the 7 Daily Times. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Airing It Out. You can find us, as always, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you want to read Josh and I's writing, you can subscribe to a sports pass from the 7 Daily Times.
It's cheap.
Yes, it is. At centerdaily.com/sportspodcast. That's center, C-E-N-T-R-E. You can follow us on Twitter at by Josh Moyer and at John Sauber. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.